Alistair Campbell, you're very welcome to studio.
Thank you.
Tell me, we could talk about your career in journalism and politics and punditry, but we're going to talk first about your writing. People will have remembered the various publications of the diaries down through the years, but you've written novels as well. I think this is your fourth novel you're up to now.
Yeah.
It's called Saturday Bloody Saturday. Tell us about it.
Well, actually, it wasn't my idea. It was the idea of a guy called Paul Fletcher, who's a former Burnley player. Burnley's my team. And he drives me. I go to games with him. He picks me up at Preston. We drive over to Burnley. He brings me back. And one day he just said, listen, I've got this idea.
When did Paul play for Burnley?
He played in the 70s. Okay. He was our most expensive player. 66,000 quid he cost. But he just said one day, look, I've got this idea for a novel and I've started writing it. And I thought, God, that's weird. I mean, he's quite an interesting guy, Paul. He's not your average sort of footballer. He's had quite an interesting business career as well. So we ended up working on it together. And it's the story of a struggling northern football team, not Burnley. It's a struggling northern football team, alcoholic manager trying to manage this team. He's basically, he's on a good cup run. If the cup runs ends, he's out of the job. And alongside it, we've got this IRA active service unit that's trying to take out Merlin Rees, the then Northern Ireland secretary.
Okay, so is that your part of the book?
Well, we sort of worked on it both together. I mean, he in the original idea, he had this plot line about the IRA.
Okay.
His basic take was that, you know, he didn't think a novel just about football would be of that much interest. I actually think there aren't that many good novels about sport. It's a tragedy because sport is such a wonderful area of life. I still think the best novel about sport ever was This Sporting Life by David Story. That's almost 60 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's...
So you hedged your bets a little and put in the IRA, was that it?
Yeah, wasn't that? I mean, I never quite know where ideas come from for novels, but it does work because the two plot lines weave in and out of each other and they come together at the end in quite a dramatic way. But it's also about teams. You've got these two very different teams. You've got this football team. And what we've done, we've created a fictional team with a fictional manager, fictional players, but we're playing real teams and real players.
Okay.
So for example, when we play Leeds, Johnny Giles is in there, Billy Bremner's in there, Revy's in there.
Oh, Don, this is Don Revy's Leeds.
Yeah. Because back in the 70s, when we played Chelsea, the main game, there's a massive game against Leeds, which we lose. In fact, I'll tell you a funny story. The lawyer who was reading the book for all the IRA stuff, he actually said, listen, I think you should make sure Ron Harris and Johnny Giles are happy with the way they're portrayed in this, because they are proper hard men in the game. And actually, they're both given us very nice covers, back cover quotes. But so we're playing these real teams. And likewise with the IRA, they're fictional characters, but they're trying to take out Merlin Rees. And in the background, you've got the election going on, because what happens is that they know where Merlin Rees is going to be on a particular Saturday, okay, and they're waiting for the election, because if the election falls Labour's way, which it does, then he's going to be Northern Ireland secretary, and that's obviously, you know, for the IRA back then, a massive target. So they're the two stories, and it's been fantastic fun, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Obviously, Paul would have brought his knowledge of the game in the 70s, having played in the 70s for Burnley. And look, Northern Ireland and the IRA and everything like that, and of course the issues around politics, and Merlin Rees is a Labour politician, you'd know all about that. But in terms of the internal workings of that IRA unit, that team, as you described them, did you know about that? Did you know enough about that? Or how did you research that?
Well, it's a novel, so, you know, you do kind of let your imagination run riot a little bit. But I did send it to people. I sent it to Martin McGuinness. He actually made one or two really helpful suggestions.
Okay.
I sent it to other people who are still around. And it wasn't... You're right. I think it's important with the novel to understand it is fiction, but you want it to feel authentic. So I'll give you one example. There was, in the original draft, which I sent to Martin, one of the characters in the IRA team was kind of controlling operations from inside prison. And he just said, that's not going to happen. It's not happening. I'm just telling you, it won't happen. So I just took that as read. And so we changed it. And likewise, because it's a book about football and about terrorism, very masculine, but actually a good novel, you need strong female characters as well. And so I said to Martin at one point, I said, listen, these four characters we've got in London, what's the chances of one of them being a woman? He said, oh yeah, hi. So actually somebody who I think was Brendan became Colleen, Okay. And she's now a very, very, very strong character within the book. So it was that kind of thing. It was, and also there were just little things that less so. Martin was more on that kind of bigger stuff. But there were other people I sent it to who just said, look, that wouldn't happen. That would happen. Have you thought about this? And that's kind of, it's helpful to get that kind of detail.
How did you find writing it with someone else?
Quite odd. But we never had a fallout. We are good mates. I mean, it's Paul's one of those, you say never meet your heroes. He was a hero of mine when I was a kid, but he's become a very close friend. And I think he recognises that, you know, I mean, I've written, this is my 15th book. I write a lot of words every day. I'm a kind of words person. And I've written novels before, which is very, very different to anything he'd ever done before.
Mm.
So he was willing, I think, to let me kind of, once I got into it, to kind of, he would listen to me. But then quite often he would say, that doesn't feel right, that doesn't feel real. And then we'd just have another go at it. We never physically sat down together and wrote. It was knocking it backwards and forwards. But it was, you know, it was very much his idea. I mean, it's like, and we do have a laugh because the publisher decided to put my name on the front cover twice as big as his. So he's got this thing there about how he hates font size. But it's, yeah, it's a very interesting experience, right? Because normally one of the things I both like and dislike about writing is it's so solitary. I mean, I hear you're in the chair there, but you've got people that you're working with. You're part of a team.
Yeah, he'll tell me what to say.
Exactly,
I just,
yeah.
I'm just a mannequin.
Like a puppet. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but when you're writing in something like a novel, okay, you know you might have an editor, you might have a publisher, but you're very much on your own.
Mm.
So actually, it was interesting and enjoyable to do it with somebody else. Because I mentioned the thing about teams. I think both Paul and I are really good team players. I've always felt I'm a team person. So actually, it would never have crossed my mind to write a novel with somebody else. But actually, that little team has worked really well.
And what's the reception been like to it?
It's been great. It's been good. I mean, the reviews have been good. It went straight into the top 10 in the UK, and the only benefit of that is that you can put bestseller on the paperback. But it's good. And you know, the other thing that's been interesting is the reaction in football has been good. You know, a lot of clubs have been in touch, you know, could we go and do talks and this kind of thing.
And Burnley, I'm sure, you've been there.
Burnley's been great. And we did the first big book signing we did was in the club shop. So that, but let me say, by the way, because I know Burnley have got quite a few fans in Ireland. It is not Burnley. In fact, we play Burnley are mentioned in the book to make clear people understand this is a fictional team. We actually want anybody who supports any football team to think it could be their team.
All right. Well, look, it's Saturday, Bloody Saturday is the name of the book. Alistair Campbell and Paul Fletcher, the authors of it. You see Alistair Campbell's name twice as big as Paul's, as you said, on the front cover. If you're looking for it, that's how you'll spot it. Before we talk about anything else, because there's plenty we could talk about, I just want to ask you about Burnley. They're having a great season. They were up to fourth not too long ago.
Yeah.
Stephen Ward got injured around then. He's kind of come back in the team recently. Big win against Everton at the weekend.
Win.
Things are going well?
Things are going very well. And actually, I think we did miss him. I think that we missed Robbie Brady as well.
Mm.
I mean, we really miss him. But we have gone. I mean, I did an interview with our manager last week for Sky, and I was saying, you know, we've not had this. You know, we're going on. Let's be honest, form's not that been great. He says, go on, you can say it. We've had a bad run. And actually, you're right that Stephen Ward going out was, you know, coincidentally. I think that was his last game. Was our last win. It might have been the one after. He's been a great player for us. Absolutely brilliant. But you know, this has been one of the best seasons to be a Burnley fan.
You'll be playing in Europe next year.
I think it's going to be tough. But although Arsenal are doing everything they can to help us.
Yeah, well, certainly hard to touch me. I'm an Arsenal fan.
Are you?
Yeah, I am.
Are you
unfortunately.
Wenger in or Wenger out?
I'm Wenger out at this stage. Oh. I've been Wenger out for a couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I just think it's run its course. It has run its course. Mm. Get rid. Time to get rid. Look, playing in Europe gives me a nice clunky segue into Brexit and being in Europe or out. I was reading in the New European. You were writing yesterday about Brexit, and you were framing it in terms of if instead of when.
Mm.
Is that realistic still?
I hope so. Funnily enough, on the plane over today, I was writing this week's piece for the New European, and I was making the point back to, you know, about football, how, like, we're playing West Ham on Saturday, okay? It is my wishful thinking that we win, right? Now, actually, I also think that we can win, but I think you've got to be very, very careful. about this whole wishful thinking thing. I want Brexit to be stopped. I think it's a complete catastrophe for Britain. And I think while you've got a bit of fight in you, we should still be fighting. There's a lot of fatalism out there. Oh, it can't be stopped. And the truth is, when you've got the government and the opposition and most of the media saying it's a done deal, it's going to be hard. But at the same time, I think that when you see something like Theresa May's speech last week, which, OK, it served its purpose in uniting the Tory party for 24 hours, but in terms of the big questions at the heart of Brexit, they're still unanswered. Yeah, the Irish border, trade policy, customs policy, they're still unanswered. So whilst that is the case, I think we've got to keep fighting, at least for the chance for the British people to be able to judge whether the Brexit deal she comes back with is actually what they voted for.
Did you take any encouragement from that speech? Because I wondered watching it, you know, we had the Beast from the East as yet in the UK as well, and we had Storm Emma, so there's a huge amount of snow, and we were all watching weather forecast 24/7. So this was a nice break, actually, to sit and watch this speech. And I thought I saw maybe just the faintest hints of the fudge, not the inevitable fudge, but if there's going to be a solution to this, it'll be some sort of fudge. That's how these problems are solved. When she talked about, you know, starting off on a point where you've got kind of very close regulatory regimes, and then as new regulations are brought in at Brussels and a decision is made in the UK to either mirror them or not, then an independent arbiter would look at it. And look, all very complicated, all very messy. But I just wondered, you know, is this leaving the door open for some sort of solution to get it over the line? Or was that, or am I being exactly like you? Was that more hope than expectation?
That might be what she was trying to communicate. But I still think that ultimately leadership is about confronting the real choices and the real decisions. So if you think about it, so what was her answer on the Irish border? She was going to sit down with the Commissioner and the Taoiseach. That was it. Now, and the Taoiseach very quickly came out and said, listen, this isn't a bilateral issue. Mm. This is about Europe, the European Union and the UK. And you also beg the question, what the hell have you been doing for the last 20 months, Prime Minister? So I didn't take that. What I took was a very political, very tactical covering up, parking of these really big issues. Now, I think where you might be right, I think somebody described it as saying this was her trying to set out the possibility of the softest possible hard Brexit.
Yeah. Right?
Now, I just think ultimately, this is maybe where I'm in some, on the one thing I'm in some agreement with the extreme Brexiteers. I'm not sure this soft Brexit thing actually stacks up. I think you're either in or you're out.
Mm.
And I'm not sure. I think this is so big, I'm not sure a classic Euro fudge is going to do it. And I just wish that somebody at the top of our politics, either party, frankly, would come out and say, do you know what? We've looked at this every which way. We've really tried to make it work. But we have decided there is no way of doing this without damaging us, our country. And she said that, by the way. That's the first time. This is the thing I think was the most significant thing in the speech, is the first time it actually came from the Prime Minister's lips that this effectively is going to make us poorer. She talked about, you know, clearly the coming out of the market, this is going to... So I think that was quite a big thing. But I think it was so vague in terms of... And we haven't got that long.
Yeah.
And, you know, sorry to keep banging on about football, but I sometimes think that it's like you're watching a football match at the moment, and one team, the government, they've taken the ball into the corner and they're just knocking it about, wasting a bit of time trying to get to March 2019, then we're out. And in the other corner, you've got the Labour Party. They're playing a completely different game, but they're in the corner flag as well. Their game is the election. They want a general election. And they've decided, and I think it's a mistake, but they've decided actually to keep their heads down on Brexit.
Mm.
But Brexit is the single biggest issue facing the country.
Eventually, Jeremy Corbyn did come out and say, look, they're in favour of staying in a customs union. Mm. Should he have been quicker with that? Because there was a certainty vacuum in British politics. You know what I mean? There was no one really offering a very clear position. And at least now there is a clear position from Labour, you might say. Now, people might disagree with it and they might want out of the customs union. They want more than just being in the customs union. But, you know, at least have they done something right?
I thought it was a step in the right direction, but I really think they've got to go a lot further than that. Because ultimately, at least now you can say there's a basic difference. Up until now, I think Labour's been kidding itself in saying the public sees a big difference between Labour's position and the government's. But I think, you know, as these negotiations go forward, ultimately, if this hard Brexit happens, then I think people will say Labour's not done enough to try to stop it. And we, and the thing that, if you look at the people who are really driving this Brexit, this hard Brexit now, it's Nigel Farage, it's Johnson, it's Rees-Mogg, it's the hard right. And are Labour really going to sort of, you know, stand by and watch that happen? So I hope that the Labour Party will actually become more aggressive on this. And I know the political risks. I accept all the political risks. But ultimately, I think what you talked about the vacuum. I think at the moment, people in our country, they're just desperate for some leadership. They're not getting it from the government. I mean, the government is this road to Brexit series. I mean, it's been a joke.
Yeah, we mentioned the North. You mentioned the North in passing. But before Christmas, there was a lot of, I suppose, backslapping, certainly over here, that this backstop, this guarantee, Option C, as it's now being called, had been agreed in the draft agreement. Now, when that came out in the legal text last week, it was rejected. Mm. And that wasn't that surprising, actually. About 2 days after the backstop, David Davis was on the Andrew Marr show and said, that's not really binding anyway. But I just wonder... There is concern, huge concern here, not just about business north and south, which is huge, a huge amount of trade over and back over the border, not just about the impact on people's lives who have family over and back on the border, but the impact on the peace process and the Good Friday Agreement. Mm. 20 years this year in April, it's going to be the Good Friday Agreement. Is that concern justified or is that over egging it? Because I know we've had the Kate Hoeys in this world being kind of dismissive of the Good Friday Agreement.
I think the concern is justified. And I think, you know, we talked about the book and the role of the IRA. It's not that long ago. So that's set in 1974. As you say, the Good Friday Agreement was 20 years ago. And so we've had a kind of generation grow up without really knowing about what that was like. Now, I don't think we should sort of exaggerate. And I do think one of the problems with this whole debate is that there's so much exaggeration on both sides. But I think you don't have to be that conscious of history to worry. And the thing that really does my head in about these hard Brexiteers like Kate Hoey and Hannan and Rees-Mogg and these people, for them it is Brexit at any cost, whatever the cost. So even for them to utter the words, for any of them to utter the words, the Good Friday Agreement has, you know, passed its sell-by date, it's served its purpose, what they're actually saying is this is bigger than any of that. Brexit at any cost is all that we're about, and I think there's a real danger that you're playing with fire. So, and there's a reason why everybody is so keen for there to be no return of a hard border. There's a very, very good reason, and so don't put that at risk. But equally, don't just will away the problem. What was her answer last week, Theresa May? She's basically saying, "We'll somehow deal with it." But how? You've had 20 months.
Yeah, she said, I think, as well to Andrew Marr on Sunday morning, she said, I have some very good solutions for Northern Ireland, but she didn't tell us what they were. Unfortunately, look, that's all we have time for. Alistair Campbell, the name of the book, again, Saturday, Bloody Saturday, written with Paul Fletcher, former Burnley player. It's not about Burnley, as he's very keen to emphasise, but it is about a Northern club, alcoholic manager. He's in a cup run. That's all that's keeping him in the job. There's also the IRA. There's a general election. There's lots in there. As he said, it is in all good bookstores now. Alistair, thank you very much.
I'll be very, very angry if it's not.
All right, look. Thank you very, very much for coming in to us today. Time now for a quick break, and we'll be back then with the news and sport.